Blog Talk Radio.
Stories together because we just have that much. Well, let's keep it real. It's a function of lateness and just having that much stuff to talk about. We got some lighthearted stuff. We got some serious stuff. I'm just excited. That's all I can say about the Thursday show is that I'm excited. I don't think I'm going to give you the rundown and the teasers today. I want to get to as much of this as possible. I got a weird outfit on today. I don't know if I'm feeling this. I look like a club owner in Miami in 1987. I look like I tried to copy Miami Vice and it just didn't work out too well. I look like either that or some sort of what's the thing called? Oh, God, I'm going to blank on this, and it's going to drive me fucking crazy. Transformer. I look like some sort of Transformer. It's just weird, the shirt matching with the... I got the shiny-ass gray jacket on, gray coat, and a shirt that, like, matches it almost too well. So, yeah, this is going to be an interesting day. That's all I have to say. Okay, let's start out with something actually pretty lighthearted. And then we'll get into the serious stuff in a little bit, but this is just a little something to wet the palate. That sounds so fucking dirty, man. I don't know why anybody ever invented that saying and why I just repeated it. Wet the palate. Like, what the fuck? That's so gross it should be censored. Okay. So yesterday, Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC was on Twitter trending, and I was like, why is that? Lawrence O'Donnell, he's like so boring and so vanilla and nobody gives a fuck about him, and who even knows if he's still on air? He's got like 12 people that remain watching his show. And so I clicked to figure out why it is he's trending. Turns out there was a leak of a video that was kind of like a Bill O'Reilly style video, like this is the behind the scenes stuff. You kept the camera rolling when he didn't think the camera was rolling, and I guess somebody who doesn't like him, who worked for him, or maybe even still works for him, who knows, was like, I'm going to leak this because this is fucking hilarious. And it's him flipping out. So what you're going to see here is David Rutz put this together, credit where credit is due, David Rutz on Twitter. And what you're going to see here is a mix-up, a mashup of Lawrence O'Donnell flipping out and Bill O'Reilly flipping out from that now infamous video that came out years ago. And he throws in some music there, which makes it somehow even funnier. But what's incredible is how similar these two are. It's amazing. Check it out.
What's going on? Why am I losing this?
Whatever it is, it's not right on the teleprompter.
Who's asking for a Labor Day rundown in my ear?
Now, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
You have insanity in my earpiece.
There's no words there.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, to play us out.
Stop the hammering.
Stop. Hammer time.
All right, go, go.
Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer?
I can't do it.
Where is it? Where's the hammer?
We'll do it live.
Somebody go up there and stop the hammering.
We'll do it live.
Stop the hammering.
Do it live.
I'll go down to the goddamn floor myself and stop it.
I'll write it and we'll do it live.
Call fucking Phil Griffin. I don't care who the fuck you have to call. Stop the hammering.
We'll do it live.
Fuck it.
Shit. Fucking thing sucks.
Jesus Christ. This fucking stupid hammering. It just fucking sucks.
Fucking thing sucks.
It fucking sucks.
Fucking thing sucks.
Any fucking thing can come into my ear at any moment.
Do it live.
That's what I know. Anybody can get into my fucking ear at any time.
Well, do it live.
Where's the hammer?
I enjoyed that more than I should. Okay, here's a really funny addition to this story. I was prepping everything and organizing everything for my show for today, they're doing something nearby. I don't know. It's some sort of construction or some sort of like tree removal or whatever. And they're using these giant machines that are super fucking loud. And I'm like trying to put the story in order. And we got like, I hear the countdown. We got like a minute left to the show. And all you hear in the background is like, and I'm like, oh God, oh God. And, you know, I was thinking, damn, I'm about to go O'Reilly on this bitch. I'm about to go O'Donnell on this bitch. Because that's what it feels like. Like, when you're doing something live and there's, like, a little nuisance here or there, and it throws off your concentration fully, I mean, it really is fucking infuriating. And he, you know, these guys both lost it. There's no excuse for how they were acting in terms of, they were really like shouting at people in an incredibly disrespectful way. So there's no excuse for that. But I can relate to that, like that feeling. There's one part there where Lawrence O'Donnell does this, like, he's like, like it's just this burst of adrenaline and energy where he just wants to stop the thing that's annoying him. He's like, and I can relate to that being live. I mean, there, one time a light blew when I was live on air, and it just cut off my, like, my whole train of thought was gone. I may have well have been speaking in the year 1723, and then fast forward to today, and you go, okay, try to remember that thing you said on August 3rd in 1723. It just, the whole train of thought was gone. I was like, well, there goes everything. And I wanted to have a Bill O'Reilly moment or a Lawrence O'Donnell moment. I'm like, fucking thing sucks! Fucking light! With the fucking thing, with the light. God, stop the hammering. Where's the hammering? Stop the hammering. It's crazy how similar that was. It's almost like they tried to copy each other, but obviously they didn't. It was just like anger boiling over. You know what else is strange? This is just, I'm just rambling now, but I find that sometimes, like a lower pitch, lower volume noise that has a certain sound to it. Like there's like a certain vibration to a lower noise that really gets under my skin even more than a louder noise that doesn't have the annoying like sound or vibration to it. So it's almost like in some situations I'd rather have the louder noise that's not as annoying than the lower noise that just kind of hits that nerve or that cord or whatever the fuck it is in my brain. It's like, I have to stop this. I can't fucking operate under these conditions. So, yeah. Part of me sympathizes with their, you know, live show, things not going smoothly. But then obviously the other part of me is like, you don't treat anybody like that, man. Lawrence O'Donnell apologized too. He said something on Twitter like, a better anchorman and a better person would have handled that situation better. I'm sorry. Like, okay, We hear you. I think I'm not sure if Bill O'Reilly ever apologized for it. I think he might have done like a, well, there's some video of me that resurfaced from years ago on the internet, and he like laughed about it and shit, but I'm not sure if he ever apologized. But yeah, fun for everybody, man. That's, that's some good stuff. That's some good stuff. Okay. Now, let's get on to the serious stuff. Jeff Stein of Vox decided to do the radical thing of asking a Republican senator a serious question about the Republican health care bill. And the result is hilarious, and it's pretty much exactly what you'd expect. So Jeff Stein says, Senator, I wanted to ask you for a policy-based explanation for why you're moving forward with the Graham-Cassidy proposal. What problems will this solve in the health care system? And Pat Roberts says, That is the last stage out of Dodge City. Stein says, I'm just trying to explain to our readers what the policy. Roberts interjects, what readers? Who do you represent? It's a website called Vox. Roberts, Graham Cassidy is the last stage out of Dodge City. I'm from Dodge City. So it's the last stage out to do anything. Restoring decision-making back to the states is always a good idea, but this is not the best possible bill. This is the best bill possible under the circumstances. If we do nothing, I think it has a tremendous impact on the 2018 elections and whether or not Republicans still maintain control and we have the gavel. Stein, but why does this bill make things better for Americans? How does it help? Roberts, pardon me? Oh, that's so sad. Stein, why does this make things better? What is this doing? Roberts, look, we're in the back seat of a convertible. What? Being driven by Thelma and Louise. And we're heading toward the canyon. That's a movie that you've probably never seen. Stein, I do know Thelma and Louise, sir. Roberts, so we have to get out of the car. And you have to have a car to get into. And this is the only car there is. Oh, Jesus Christ. He keeps asking him, hey, policy-wise, how does this help the American people? He's like, well, you know, I don't know if you ever saw Dirty Harry. But why are you bringing up old movies? Why are you bringing up weird fucking platitudes? This is the last stop in Dodge City. Last stop out of Dodge City here. Stop fucking talking in your cutesy Midwestern way and say what the fuck you think this helps the American people with. Well, guess what? He can't. Why? Because the bill is a goddamn dumpster fire like every other Republican proposal on healthcare. Isn't it amazing that every proposal the Republicans come up with, when you have the experts crunch the numbers on it, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, every time they come back and say, in every single measurable category, things are worse under this reform. So they do this healthcare reform legislation, and it's like they crafted it without thinking of the effects on the American people at all. And that is what happens, because in reality, the Republican Party is 100% serving Big Pharma and the for-profit health insurance companies and the corporations. Now, the Democrats serve them as well, but the Republicans, it's like they don't even put a mask on it of, hey, we think this is good for people. Because, again, there's not a single category you point to where you go, hey, this is the area where it helps the American people. Fewer people are covered. The cost of insurance shoots up. No more protection for pre-existing conditions because it makes it optional on a state-by-state basis. And at least half the states are going to opt to not cover pre-existing conditions. So there's nothing they could point to, policy-wise, where you go, hey, look, see, this is why it's going to be better. So what do? When they're asked straightforward questions, hey, how does this help? What policies help here? What's the purpose of this? Dodge City, Dirty Harry, The Parent Trap, Thelma and Louise, something. Yeah, something. And they don't know, man. Remember, there was this amazing stories that came out about Republicans went to go meet with Donald Trump to talk about provisions of their health care bill, the bill that we were calling, shorthand, Trump Care. And in the meetings, the Republicans who were more directly involved with crafting the legislation, talking to Trump, They said it became clear he doesn't know what's in his own bill. And whenever the media would ask Trump about policies in the bill, he could never answer and mention policies. He would always go back to procedure, exactly like Pat Roberts did. So when the media asked him, Mr. Trump, how is this bill going to affect the cost of insurance? How is it going to increase people who are covered? Can you explain that to us and how the different provisions affect it? What are the provisions that affect it? And he would say, well, you know, we've been working night and day. It's been tremendous. It's been unbelievable. And what you need to understand is we're working with fine people, some of the best people, some of the best Congress people. And what we found is that we can sit down at the table and we can work together. And the Democrats are just obstructing, but we'll work together. And we'll get a great legislation. We will repeal and replace Obamacare. And they would reiterate, Mr. President, no, I'm talking about the policy in this bill. And he would immediately pivot back to procedure. They do that because Trump didn't even know what policies were in his own fucking bill. The American people knew better, which is why only 17% support it. How crazy do you have to be as a party? How crazy do you have to be to continue to push legislation only 17% of the American people want? And by the way, it wasn't just Pat Roberts. Pat Roberts is the best example of somebody who was asked about policies and he can't answer. But it was Jim Inhofe. It was everybody. Jeff Stein kept asking all these different Republican politicians, hey, name the how this helps the American people. And they don't have an answer. They don't have an answer because it doesn't help the American people. So yet again, this is beyond pathetic. And by the way, a story we're going to get to in a little bit is the talking points the Republicans came up with to try to push their bill, Graham Cassidy. Get this. This is fucking hilarious. Their talking points to push their bill doesn't even push their bill. Their talking points attack Bernie's single-payer plan. Okay. Number one, you're not pushing your own bill. Number two, Bernie's single-payer plan isn't even law. Number three, you really want to have that fight, son? Because if the Democrats are even 8% competent, they will bury you if you attack them. Because you're attacking them on the area where they're the strongest now, because more Democrats are coming out in favor of single-payer, in favor of Bernie's bill. So I say, shit, if the Republicans want to attack us on that, I love having that fight. I bathe in that fight. We will destroy you in that fight because all the facts are on our fucking side. So they don't know what the fuck they're doing. And all it takes is a Democratic Party that's just a little bit competent to bury these motherfuckers. Excuse me. Because this is the saddest thing I've ever seen. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna skip ahead and I'm gonna do that story. I'm gonna do that story about Bernie Sanders and single payer and the talking points from the Republicans. So let me. Is this from the RNC or hold on? Let me take a look. Let me see. No, it's just not straight from the RNC. Oh, it is from the RNC. Okay. All right, my bad. Hold on. I didn't even have this this story really prepped for today, but I just referenced it, and I have it right here. I had it pulled up, so let's do this. You guys are going to love this next story. So Republicans are trying to push their horrendous Graham Cassidy repeal bill, Obamacare repeal bill. And it's very similar to the old Trump care legislation that had a 17% approval rating among the American people. Just to give a few examples, it's going to increase the number of uninsured people. Premiums are going to go up in the first year by at least 20%. Gets rid of protections for pre-existing conditions. It makes it so that it's optional on a state-by-state basis, and at least 50% of the states are going to opt out of covering pre-existing conditions. So it's really just a sick joke, and there's united opposition against this. It's insane that the Republicans are pushing it. We just covered the story about how journalist Jeff Stein of Vox questioned a bunch of different Republican senators, hey, how does your policy help the American people? The most straightforward question ever. Hey, tell me how your policy helps the American people. They couldn't answer. They couldn't answer. They don't have anything to say because it doesn't. They just fucking think in right-wing talking points and platitudes and, you know, in Rush Limbaugh sound bites. Well, we got to repeal Obamacare. That's okay, but it's okay. So, but how does your plan help people? New phone, who dis? So now the RNC got in on the fun and put together talking points that the Republican politicians are supposed to use to push Graham Cassidy. There's only one problem. The talking points don't push Graham Cassidy. So wait, what? How can you put together talking points specifically for pushing your health care bill, and it doesn't, your talking points don't even directly address your health care bill? Most of your talking points are not even on that issue. Well, it's because, again, they have nothing where they can sell it, so they just have to keep defining what they're against. Can't say what they're for because they're not for anything. Ask a far-right Republican, hey, what's your ideal healthcare system? Well, you free market and remove the lines around the states and repeal Obamacare. I know what you're fucking against. What are you for? The ideas you gave don't help the American people in any way. They wouldn't lower costs. They wouldn't increase coverage. So what are you talking about? Well, I'm against Obamacare. I know what you're against. What the fuck are you for? Well, here we go. Now, again, they can't sell it on its merits, so pivot and attack something else. Obscure, deflect, and attack something else. And what did they decide to attack? In their talking points to push their own bill. Medicare for All. That is fucking rich. So listen to this. This is straight from the RNC. Senator Sanders' plan for government-run health care. Senator Sanders' plan would levy an enormous $32 billion burden on hardworking American taxpayers. Sanders' plan would mandate an exorbitant tax increase on middle-class Americans. Okay, let's pause there for a second. They're wrong in multiple layers. It's fucking hilarious. So they say $32 billion. That's a typo. They meant to say $32 trillion. $32 trillion over 10 years. But here's what they're omitting. If we don't do single-payer Medicare for All, it costs $49 trillion. These losers are. Anytime you hear anybody try to attack single-payer Medicare for All, and say, how are we going to afford it? Your answer should be, how are we going to afford not to do it? Because single-payer Medicare for All saves us $17 trillion. That's what you say. So whenever anybody acts like it's too expensive, we can't do it, you say, no, it saves money. It 100% saves money. Because if you don't do it and you keep the current system in place with all the price gouging and all the for-profit middlemen and all the inefficiencies, it costs $49 trillion. So, and there's another sleazy trick people do that happened during the primary. People who were on Team Hillary just lied about Bernie's bill. One of the things they do is they'd add up the cost of single-payer Medicare for All, Bernie's plan, and they'd add it on top of what we currently pay for health insurance and health care. And they'd say, see, we can't do it because it costs that much more. Whoa. No. It doesn't cost that much more. You forgot to subtract the entire cost of the current system. The idea is to reform the current system. That's the idea, not to keep the current system in place as is and then add the cost of single-payer Medicare for All on top of it. I mean, this is like elementary level shit, but they fuck it up, and they fuck it up on purpose because they're trying to smear it. They're trying to defeat it by lying about it, by misleading about it. Every other modern nation has one version or another of a single-payer system. They have better health outcomes, lower costs, and they cover everybody. So don't tell me we can't do it. Don't tell me we can't do it. So they're wrong. They're just wrong. Single-payer Medicare for All saves money. You get rid of the unnecessary for-profit price-gouging middlemen, and you fix the inefficiencies. All right, next talking point. Democrats are divided over the costs and even the most liberal members of the party have criticized the plan. Bullshit. You know who criticizes the plan? People who are bought by for-profit health insurance companies. Among the American people, 80% of Democrats say, let's do single-payer Medicare for all. 61% of all Americans favor it. There are more Republicans that favor Medicare for all than don't favor Medicare for all. It's a plurality of Republicans that say, yes, let's do Medicare for all. So that is so fucking disgusting and misleading. Even liberal party members have criticized the plan. Well, in Washington, sure, because in Washington, it's the goddamn swamp. It's the swamp, and people are bought and owned by corporate America. Among the American people, it's across the board. People are like, yeah, let's do Medicare for all. Wildly popular, the most popular health care plan by far and away. Next. Even in very liberal states, these government-run health care plans have failed because the costs are too high. Whoa, 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 whoa. What state are you talking about? What state are you talking about? What state is there in the United States of America that has fully implemented a single-payer system? There isn't one. There isn't one. Now, there's one or two where it got through the legislature, but what happened after it got through the legislature? The for-profit health insurance companies crushed it and didn't even let it go into effect. So what the fuck are you talking about? Their talking points are such shameless lies. That is such a shameless lie. Even in very liberal states, these government-run healthcare plans have failed because the costs are too high. We don't even have it in any of the states. What the fuck are you talking about? And everywhere it's been tried around the world, it succeeded. You go, don't take my word for it. You go look at the top 10 healthcare systems in the world. And you go, you know, you look at whichever outlet you think is most credible, whether it's the World Health Organization or whether it's others. We've covered multiple ones on the show. It just so happens that single-payer systems make up the overwhelming majority of the best systems in the world. Okay, next point. Obamacare failed spectacularly and devastated the American healthcare system. If we allow for a complete government takeover, hardworking families nationwide will face crippling tax increases, higher wait times, and worse care. Okay, that. Notice they're not even giving details. Because whatever details they give, like the number in their first talking point, they're wrong about. So then by the end, they're just saying shit. It failed spectacularly. Obamacare? Well, actually, no. Obamacare increased the number of people covered by millions. It protects people with pre-existing conditions. It makes it so that until the age of 26, you can stay on your parents' health insurance. It makes it so that health insurance companies are mandated to spend, I think it's at least 60% or 80%. I think it's 80% of their money on actual health care, when it used to be, you know, health insurance companies would spend half their money on health care and the rest on overhead costs. So Obamacare doesn't go far enough. But to argue it made the healthcare system worse is just not true. It cut costs and covered more people. So that's just not accurate to say it made the healthcare system worse. Anything would have made our healthcare system better. It was the biggest joke in the world. It still is a pretty big fucking joke. But anything would have made it better from what it was. And then the key point, taxes, taxes, taxes. I just told you, it saves money. So you have to, if I say to you, okay, your taxes are going to be raised by 1%, let's say, just for argument's sake. Your taxes are raised by 1%. But then I also tell you that, hey, as of right now, you spend 2% or 3% of your income on your health insurance. So I'm going to take that 2% or 3%, give you that money back, and then now I'm going to take 1% more in taxes. What are you going to say? You're going to go, well, I understand basic math. I'm not a fucking idiot. So, yes, I'm in favor of that system. Well, they try to obfuscate. They try to act like, tax increases. But you're not including the fact that you're not gonna have to pay premiums, copays, deductibles. You're not going to have to pay the exorbitant price-gouged rate that you're currently paying for your private health insurance. So they have nothing but to lie. And again, with this bullshit line, wait lines, wait lines, wait lines, rationing of care. Guess what? Literally every single system in the world rations care. It's just a matter of how you ration it. In the United States, we ration care by size of your wallet. In single-payer systems, they do it by need. Which makes more sense? Which makes more sense? Hey, let's ration care based on who's richest, or let's ration care based on need. And anytime anybody talks about wait lines in single-payer countries, you have to understand that's only for elective procedures. That's only for elective procedures. So that means, you know, if you want something that's not immediately necessary, yeah, you might have to wait a little bit. Whoop-de-frickin'-do. But people try to, the people on the far right try to make it seem like if, you know, you need some imminent cancer surgery, and they're like, we'll get to you in 3 weeks. That's just bullshit. They have nothing but to lie, man. So that's where we are. And these were the talking points to push Graham Cassidy. Listen, if the Democrats don't know how to counter these preposterous attacks, it's the saddest thing I've ever seen. Because 61% of the American people already agree with you. 80% of Democrats agree with you. More Republicans agree with you than don't agree with you on Medicare for All. So when the Republicans start to attack something that you already are massively popular on, you better have your responses ready to go. You better be willing to regurgitate every single point I just made. Oh, it costs $32 trillion. Yeah, but if we don't do it, it costs $49 trillion, so we save $17 trillion. What's your next bullshit point, son? You better have all these ready to go. Single-payer system. They cover more people. It costs less. Better health outcomes. Every other nation does it better than we do. That's what the studies show. That's what the studies prove. Every other modern nation says healthcare is a right. We don't in this country. We have 45,000 people that die every year because they don't have access to basic healthcare. So the Democrats, I mean, you guys could run roughshod on this issue. But let's see what they do. Because Democrats, being Democrats, number one, most of them still don't believe in Medicare for All, which is the saddest thing in the world. Elected Democrats, I mean, to be clear. Most of them don't believe in Medicare for All, which is pathetic. But even among the ones that do, like, do I think Senator Kamala Harris is well-versed in the counter-arguments on Medicare for All? Of course not. Of course not. But you're going to need people like Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and Al Franken and all those people to learn all the points that Bernie makes on a regular basis and Ro Khanna makes on a regular basis so that they can effectively counter-argue this stuff. Because as soon as you give in to their framing, you're done. And that's what the Democrats are known to do on every issue. Like, they just give in to the right-wing framing. I mean, virtually every Democrat supports endless war. Why? They bought into the right-wing framing. It's to protect the nation. Yes. We're the world police. Yes. Stop buying into their fucking framing. They are wrong. So we'll see what happens here, but this is just the saddest thing I've ever fucking seen. The Republicans have no way to argue in favor of their own proposal, so they just attack Medicare for All. If the Democrats had strategists that knew what the fuck they were doing, the response would be, yummy, yummy in my tummy. We're now going to destroy you. Okay. I got to take a quick break. When we come back, there's a provision hidden in the new Republican health care bill that shows you how ridiculous they are. And then Trump gave his first UN speech, and we're going to talk about a certain moment in there. Stay right there. We will be right back. We're back, people. We are back. We are back. We are back. There's a provision hidden in this new Republican health care bill that really shows you how unserious they are and how corrupt they are. So this is from The Intercept. Louisiana Republican Senator John Kennedy plans to use the most recent effort to repeal and replace portions of the Affordable Care Act to push an amendment that would bar states from enacting their own single-payer systems, he told reporters on Monday. When asked by The Intercept on Tuesday about the status of his legislation, Kennedy said that the bill's co-sponsors, Senator Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy, told him that the measure already bans single-payer, but that he was welcome to offer his amendment either way. I don't think states should have the authority to take money from the American taxpayer and set up a single-payer system, Kennedy said. Now, some people think that that's inconsistent with the idea of flexibility, but that's what the United States Congress is for. I very much believe in flexibility, and I know the governors want flexibility, but it's our job to make sure that the money is properly spent. Okay, so these guys just outed themselves as the biggest hypocrites on the planet, because their main argument on so many issues is, let the states decide. Look, you have to let the states decide. This is what states' rights is all about. And this argument really goes all the way back to fucking segregation, when they made the point that, well, look, we don't tell you people in the North how to act and how to treat your colored folks. We tell, you know, so you don't tell us what to do with ours, and if we want to have separate water fountains and we want to have separate entrances and we want to have segregation, well, that's our choice. So it's not about race. No, it's about states' rights. That's the argument they made for that. That's the argument they make on a million different issues. And, you know, the point is we don't believe in a big federal government making our choices for us, because Washington is so disconnected from the people. We think the government works better when it's at the local level and the state level, and let the states decide what they want to do. Well, okay, if that's the point you want to make, then obviously it would logically follow that you would be totally fine with, for example, liberal states to enact their own marijuana laws, right? Ooh, it turns out no. They go, no, no, on an issue like marijuana, it's illegal at a federal level, so sure, the federal government can lock you up, even if at the state level you want to legalize marijuana. And you go down the list. Whatever issue is viewed as a left-wing issue, they go, no, we're not going to allow the states to experiment with that. So it's just a ruse. The argument is a trick to try to say, let us do our right-wing agenda. But if you say, okay, you believe in states' rights, let's have some states do single-payer. They go, no, 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 not single payer. No, they are banning. They want to ban states from trying their own single payer, systems. This is what they do. So there are these laws called preemption laws. That's what this is. And it's pushed by right-wing think tanks, largely funded by the Koch brothers, by the way. They're big on these preemption laws. And, for example, one of them that's been passing through legislatures and proposing legislatures all across the country, right-wing legislatures, is – we are preemptively banning any minimum wage increase at the state level. How loathsome do you have to be, and how corrupt do you have to be to say, I'm going to block any future raise of the minimum wage when it's not even a living wage right now? I mean, that's mental. That's crazy. And here we go. Now they're doing it with single payer. Jeez, man, come on. Come on. They're such hypocrites, it's unbelievable. This is the same shit that happens. You know how to find a Republican who's in favor of gay marriage? An elected Republican, a politician who's in favor of gay marriage? Find out what the sexual orientation is of their son or daughter. Because they flip like that in that situation. You want to find out which Republicans are in favor of FEMA spending? Find out which one just had a natural disaster hit their own state. You know, Ted Cruz is a great example of when Hurricane Sandy hit, he voted against the relief. And he lies about it up and down, like we can't go back and figure out what was going on. But he says, no, it's because there was a lot of other stuff in the bill, so I voted against the hurricane relief for the Northeast because it was filled with pork. It was a fucking one-page bill. There was no pork. But he voted against it. But then the second that Harvey hit, He goes, oh, in Texas, oh, my God, we need FEMA relief. We need it right now. Who can vote against this? What are you, crazy? Vote for it. So these guys are loathsome scumbags, and it happens over and over and over. They're such gigantic hypocrites. And understand, there is a deeper motive going on here. They know that if you actually implement a Medicare for All system, single-payer system, whether it's at the state level or the federal level, it's going to be wildly successful. Medicare has a 77% approval rating. That's exactly what would happen if you have a Medicare for All system. It would be wildly successful, covers more people, costs less, better outcomes, and the American people wouldn't want to go back. So what do? The Republican Party, they are the bitches to the private health insurance companies and Big Pharma. So they're doing their bidding when they say, no, 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 we're going to stop even the possibility of single-payer systems at the state level. They know they can't win in the battle of policies, so you just preemptively ban the policy that would kick your ass up and down. These are bad people, man. These are bad people. They're corrupt. And they don't care about the effect, the consequences of their actions. They don't care that people are going to die if we continue with this same disgusting system we have right now. They don't give a shit. They're actively trying to make it worse. They're actively trying to make the system worse. Okay. All right, Donald Trump, here we go. Give me your speech. Trump gave his first speech at the UN. Naturally, it was a disaster, but that's expected. In part of the speech, he called Kim Jong-un Rocket Man and, you know, threatened multiple countries because that's what the U.S. does, and bombastic and arrogant and over the top and, you know, as if we don't have our own problems to take care of here. We're lecturing other countries about, you know, how bad they are. You know, maybe it's time for regime change. And Rocket Man over here doing all these things. But I wanted to show you my favorite part of the speech. Listen to the reaction of the room when he talks about Venezuela, but don't focus on Venezuela here. That part is honestly largely irrelevant. Focus on what he says about socialism and the reaction of the room.
The problem in Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented, but that socialism has been faithfully implemented.
Oh, that was classic. All right, so you have to understand the context here, man. This is the UN. And people know what's up. People know the U.S. We're the ones that are the sole superpower in the world, and we got the biggest military ever created in human history. And people know that, all right, you got to be deferential to the U.S. because of the U.S., and it might be bullshit, but okay, we got to do what we got to do. So people go into speeches like Trump's about to give there knowing, like, I'm going to be applauding a lot, and I'm going to be, yay, all that stuff. But they couldn't even bring themselves to do it. That was the definition of a smattering of applause at the end there. They're like, yeah. First of all, there was like an audible laugh in the room. And then after a long drag, it's the delayed, oh, no, yeah, totally. Yeah, bro, you're totally right about your political philosophy. Yeah. Oh, that's so sad. Understand that the United States is unique in the world in our pretend total rejection of socialism, because every single modern nation, to one extent or another, has socialism. I mean, mixed market economies dominate the industrialized world. So you have aspects of capitalism and industries that are capitalists, and they're regulated, by the way. Those industries are regulated. It's not pure capitalism, or at least it shouldn't be. And in most cases, it isn't in the rest of the modern world. And you counteract that with a healthy dose of socialism, which is just government. So, for example, in the United States, we have Medicare, socialist. Medicaid, socialist. Fire department, socialist. Cops, socialist. Military, socialist. Roads, socialist. Post office, socialist. You go down the list. Anything that's government is socialist. Regulating the marketplace, child labor laws, socialist. I mean, if you had a pure capitalist system, it would be horrendous. I mean, when we had closest to a pure capitalist system in the U.S., we didn't have child labor laws. People died at the age of 37 from black lung from working in the factory all day and not having a fucking weekend. There would be no social safety net. There would be no unemployment insurance. There would be no minimum wage laws. So when somebody like Trump gets up there and just from so deep in that American right-wing bubble makes an argument like that, like, it's not because they've implemented socialism poorly, it's because they've implemented it faithfully. Like, that's a point that a bunch of clowns on the far right in the U.S. go, oh, such a good point. Yeah. But everybody else in the world goes, oh my God, you're so stupid. That is such a stupid point. I mean, like, Denmark, Norway, Iceland, Sweden, Finland, Australia, Canada, France, the U.K., these are all countries that are not only partly socialist, they have a lot more socialism mixed in with their capitalism than we do. That's what a social democracy is. And those are the countries that, at least when you look at the studies and you go to the various categories that are important, they function better than ours do. So how, like, when people from those countries in their context look at a point like Trump just made, I mean, it's just totally hacky and totally unintelligent and profoundly unnuanced. And it's just, it's embarrassing, honestly, is what it is, which is why there was a laugh, a pause, and then a fake smattering of applause. Because, you know, that there's no way of spinning that to be a reasonable statement. Every modern nation mixes capitalism and socialism, but they love to shit on just the purely socialist aspect of those systems. He doesn't even know. You know, if you ask a guy like Trump, he's like, mixed market what? What's a mixed market economy? I don't understand. Well, that's what we are. That's what every modern nation is. And the ones that function better have an even bigger dose of socialism in there. So stop with your fucking, you know, Ayn Rand level garbage. It makes no sense, and it's really embarrassing. And by the way, as a final point on this, like, the thing that makes Venezuela have massive issues is not the socialism part of what they're doing. It is the authoritarian nature of what they're doing. And it's always hilarious how people on the far right, when they want to point at the horrors of socialism, they point to places like Venezuela. They point to places like Cuba. They bring up the old Soviet Union. They bring up China. So let's also be clear about the fact that they totally blur the lines and don't even know the distinctions and differences between communism and socialism. That's point number one. And point number two, they're not bringing up the fact that the authoritarianism is the operative problem in all these different places. So nobody ever attacks socialism and then follows it up with, and that's why Sweden is in such a bad place. That's why Norway and Denmark are doing terrible. Nobody says that. Why? Because it'd be preposterous, because they're doing just fine. They're doing better than we are in many respects. So they always build a straw man and attack the straw man. Like, they tell people on the left, like, you love China. No, I don't. I don't want to copy that system at all. I want to copy, like, Sweden and Norway. Okay, but you love China. No, I don't. I just told you I didn't, and I just told you what I believe, and you still want to attack the straw man. Because you can't attack me on what my actual beliefs are, because if you tried to do that, you'd realize very quickly, I want to make our system better, and it would make our system better to have universal health care like all these other countries do, to have a free college, you know, to end the wars, for example, though that doesn't have much to do with socialism versus capitalism, to get money out of politics, to have daycare. That's another one. Other modern nations have a universal daycare system, so people don't have to go broke trying to make sure their kids are looked after as they go and earn money. So it's just sad to see that this is how the most powerful person in the world is talking. Apparently he doesn't know the basics of very important issues. Okay. Let's go to Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel, decided to go on the warpath against the new Republican health care bill. So the backstory on this is that Jimmy's son needed 3 open heart surgeries. Actually, he's only had the first one. I think he needs to get the next 2 because he has a serious health issue. And it was really a wake-up call to him that a regular family would have been screwed in that situation. If you don't have insurance and your kid is born and your kid needs 3 heart surgeries, Jimmy Kimmel had the light bulb moment where he goes, oh, people would just go bankrupt. You just lose all your money, and to keep your kid alive, you go into financial ruin. And he thought, well, that's complete and utter bullshit. So he's been fighting for universal health care since he had this realization. And now he's going to go out there and rip the Graham Cassidy Obamacare repeal bill because it's a disaster, but also because one of the authors of it, you know, went on Jimmy Kimmel's show and just lied. So let's watch, and then we'll come back and discuss.
And this guy, Bill Cassidy, just lied right to my face. Do you believe that every American, regardless of income, should be able to get regular checkups, maternity care, et cetera, all of those things that people who have health care get and need?
Yep.
So yep is Washington for nope, I guess. And I never imagined I would get involved in something like this. This is not my area of expertise. My area of expertise is eating pizza, and that's really about it. But we can't let them do this to our children and our senior citizens and our veterans and or to any of us. And by the way, before you post a nasty Facebook message saying I'm politicizing my son's health problems, I want you to know I am politicizing my son's health problems because I have to. Health insurance. We don't have to worry about this, but other people do, so you can shove your disgusting comments where your doctor won't be giving you a prostate exam once they take your health care benefits away. It's truly, it's unbelievable. Somehow Japan and England and Canada and Germany, France, they all figured health care out, and don't say they have terrible health care because it's just not true. This is a bad bill, but don't take my word for it. Here are just some of the organizations that oppose this Graham Cassidy bill. The American Cancer Society, the American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, American Lung Association, the Arthritis Foundation, Cystic Fibrosis, the ALS Association, the March of Dimes, Multiple Sclerosis Society, Children's Hospital of LA. Basically, any group you've ever given money to thinks this is a bad idea. Do you trust them or do you trust him? Okay? So if this bill isn't good enough for you, call your congressperson. That's the number. It'll go to your congressperson, wherever he or she is, 202-224-3121. You have to do this. You can't just click like on this video. Tell them this bill doesn't pass your test. And Senator Cassidy, you're on my show. You seem like you're a decent guy. But here's the thing. Nobody outside of your buddies in Congress wants this bill. Only 12% of Americans supported the last one, and this one is worse. Right now, there's a bipartisan group of senators working to approve the health care system we have. We want quality, affordable health care. Dozens of other countries figured it out. So,
all right, Jimmy. Way to go, man. So there was a part earlier there. You didn't see it. It was like a 6-minute rant. I had to chop it down for you. But there's a part where he said very clearly, he's like, you're doing the bidding of your donors. Which is like, wow, all right, so you've started to figure this stuff out. He's apparently learned that the single-payer systems around the world are better, as he referenced there, England and a bunch of other countries, and said they've all figured it out. And he learned that money controls our shitty politicians, which is probably the main problem that we're dealing with, which is we don't have clean elections, and politicians are doing the bidding of giant multinational corporations. So we figured it out, and he's using that to push proper policy, and I fucking love it, man. And what's hilarious is to see people on the right now, all of a sudden, whenever somebody on the left, who's a celebrity, makes a point, politically, people on the right go, yeah, I know your plays, you know, who are you to get involved in this? Chris Christie just said it yesterday, he's like, he's not a serious person on this issue. So weird, whenever there's a celebrity who happens to be on the left and makes a point, you say, oh, nope, that's not in the rules of the game. If you're a celebrity, just be a celebrity and shut the fuck up. But you motherfuckers elected Ronald Reagan, who was an actor, to be president, and you elected Donald Trump, who was a reality star, to be president. And you got giddy because, Clint Eastwood talked to a chair. Oh, my God, celebrities should talk about politics all the time when they agree with us. So it's whenever a celebrity agrees with you that not only do you back them up, but you elect them to high office and president in multiple instances. But when somebody on the left makes a point who's a celebrity, oh, you can't even talk about politics ever, so shut the fuck up. No, Jimmy Kimmel is right. He is right about this issue. And look, man, it took an issue that personally affected him for the light bulb to go off. But you know what? It's not like the light bulb went off and he only for selfish motives cares about this. His whole point is, I want other people to be able to afford the care that I can afford. And again, in the different part of the speech you didn't see there, he says that. He goes, yeah, this passes the Kimmel test, but a different Kimmel test. If your father is Jimmy Kimmel, that's the only way you can afford this kind of procedure. Whereas the Kimmel test was supposed to be, you know, it doesn't make a family go bankrupt to pay for health care if they need it. So I love it that he's ripping up these politicians. I love it that he gave the number to call to say, look, we got to fight this. Next, what we need to do is get Jimmy Kimmel and other really powerful celebrities on board with the next push, which is Medicare for All. Because it's 100% true. We have to defeat all these terrible, horrendous attempts to repeal Obamacare, because Obamacare did make giant steps in the right direction. It's nowhere near far enough, and it shouldn't be considered permanent, because we still have millions of people who are uninsured and the costs are still way too high and all that stuff. But all the gains that we made, we need to protect, and then the next step needs to be the push for Medicare for All, which is Bernie's bill, and I think it's time for Jimmy Kimmel and other celebrities to get on board with that and to throw their weight around and educate people about this issue and let them know, hey, here's the deal, man. We're getting screwed over on a level that people have no idea really how screwed over we are on the issue of healthcare compared to other modern nations. So let's move forward. Let's keep doing it. And I love that Jimmy Kimmel did this. Okay. Okay. Next. I might have to blow off this second break because still got a lot of stuff to get to. Or if I take it, I'll take a shorter break. All right. Sorry to do it to y'all, but Hillary Clinton again. Hillary Clinton went on Stephen Colbert's show to discuss her new book, and it was pretty insufferable.
But wait a second. It must not have been easy.
No.
It must not have been easy to write this book.
It wasn't easy. I mean, it was painful. It was horrible reliving it. And, you know, being as candid, open as I could be about the mistakes I made and talking about those, but also trying to come to grips, as I write in the book, about everything from, you know, sexism and misogyny, to voter suppression, to the unusual behavior of the former director of the FBI, and the Russians. And you have been sounding the alarm about this, because I believe so strongly that they think they succeeded in messing with our democracy, and I just can't abide that. So,
do you think they succeeded in messing with
our
democracy?
Yes, I do. Because
to what degree? Like influencing the vote or influencing opinion?
Influencing voters and therefore influencing opinion, I think, is becoming clearer and clearer. I don't know what the congressional investigations and I don't know what the special counsel investigation are going to find. I'm going to wait for that. But I don't think anybody can, with a straight face, say that the Russians did not set out to influence our election, and they did so. This latest revelation about the way they bought ads on Facebook and targeted them, we're going to find out a lot more, Stephen. And I am saying as clearly as I can, I feel like I'm a bit of a, Paula Revere. I'm trying to sound the alarm about this, is that the, you've got to understand what Putin's strategy is. He really doesn't like democracy. He thinks it's an inconvenient, messy process. And partly because I'm a woman, which does seem to get him a bit agitated, and he actually has said that, some things about that.
Did he ever say anything to personally that demonstrated his...
Well, he demonstrated, as I write in the book, you know, there's an expression, we certainly know it in New York, called man-spreading.
Yeah.
And every time I met with him, it would be, okay, the whole deal.
I don't even know where to begin with this, man. I mean, this is a new level of sad. Let's start from the top. So she's, the first thing she says there is, you know, Colbert throws a softball down the center of the plate. Oh, it must have been difficult. She, oh, yeah, no, it wasn't easy. It was painful. It was very painful. So right there, she's setting the table of the mood being, I'm a victim. Right off the bat, boom, victim. You know, oh, it wasn't easy. It was painful to write this book and relive it. It wasn't easy. You know, when Mitt Romney lost to Obama, was it like, you know, he's going after the fact, or people who had voted for him were supposed to look at him and say, no, that poor Mitt Romney. It must not have been easy going through that loss. No, we go, you lost. Move on, son. Like, why is this? This isn't that difficult. But her, oh, my God, it wasn't easy. It was painful to write this book and relive it. Okay, so why'd you even write the fucking book then? So that's the first thing. Point number one, victim. I'm a victim. Feel bad for me. Don't be mad at me or angry that you managed to somehow lose to the most unpopular candidate in history, to a clown who was a reality star buffoon, who was caught on tape saying, I grab women by the pussy, I don't even wait, who was on camera saying we should bring back torture, we should deport all undocumented immigrants, you know, we should care less about collateral damage. I mean, he said abysmal things. He said, in one of the debates, wages should be lower. You lost to that guy. It's I don't think I could have lost to Trump if I tried. I honestly don't believe it. I could have beat him with fucking blindfold on, two hands tied behind my back, and getting half the press he was. But you managed to lose, but somehow victim. I'm a victim. Okay. So then, notice, she goes, oh, no, see, I tried to get into the book on where I take responsibility. But this is Hillary Clinton 101. And this is a great point that Thomas Frank made. He goes, Hillary's shtick is to repeatedly claim that she's taking responsibility as she keeps harping away on the points that it's everybody else's fault. So she'll go, no, I'm totally taking responsibility, but you have to understand the role that the Bernie bros and sexism and misogyny played. I mean, that really affected me in a negative way now, didn't it? I am totally responsible for the loss, but clearly, I mean, the voter suppression was a huge thing. I'm so responsible, but FBI James Comey, and look, it's on me, but the Russians, the fucking Russians, oh my God, they got involved. So her shtick is so that she has the plausible deniability when somebody like me calls her out and goes, you're not taking responsibility. She goes, no, see, I isolated a quote here about how I said I take full responsibility. Yeah, but then the next four fucking paragraphs is you saying it's everybody else's fault. It's James Comey's fault, it's Jill Stein's fault, it's Gary Johnson's fault, it's misogyny, it's voter suppression, it's the Russians, it's... So she doesn't believe it's her fault. Nobody believes that she believes it's her fault. And at least some of her supporters are more upfront about it, and they go, no, I don't think it's her fault. Hillary at the same time is like, no, it's my fault. But anyway, let me give you fucking 9,317 words about how it's not my fault. So then she moves on to, and this is where it enters a new level of just mind-boggling irreality, if that's a word. I don't think it is. I just made it up. She goes, I feel like Paul Revere talking about the Russians. Paul Revere is the guy who rode on horseback and screamed, the British are coming, the British are coming. And then we fought a war. A revolutionary war. So you feel like you're Paul Revere about the Russians. What's the next part of that story, Hillary? A fucking war. But she says it so casually, like, yeah, I'm the one that's warning about a literal war, World War III against Russia. So casually, to suit her own, you know, selfish motives of, I lost, I'm going to blame Russia. So now Paula Revere, I'm like, Paula Revere warning about the inevitable war happening with Russia. Is it really that inevitable? Under good leadership, it wouldn't be inevitable. But you want it. You clearly want it. And then she goes, Putin doesn't like democracy. This is from the person who, during the campaign, there were WikiLeaks that came out, emails, where she openly talks about how we should have rigged the election in Gaza. Hillary Clinton said, oh, Putin doesn't believe in democracy, as she's in favor of and orchestrated interventions all over the world, supported interventions all over the world, in some cases to overthrow democratically elected governments. So don't tell me about how Putin doesn't support democracy. And to be clear, he doesn't. But the messenger is fucking flawed because you don't either when the outcome of the election is against who you want. It is a hollow criticism. It's as hollow as it gets. And then we enter into parody land when she talks about manspreading. Hillary Clinton is attacking Vladimir Putin for manspreading after her election loss to a monster. You couldn't write this shit in a Hollywood movie. It's so preposterous. It's like she's gone down the rabbit hole of the most extreme, ridiculous, self-parody version of feminism. The third wave feminism that somehow manages to talk about no serious issues, but whines about like the women in the portrayal of women in video games or something. She's somehow managed to go all the way down that rabbit hole to further make everybody feel like, damn, it's good we didn't vote for her. Did you know her approval rating is dropping at a time when Donald Trump is an insanely bad president? Where every Democrat, your approval rating should be fucking skyrocketing. Hers is dropping because she's going around saying shit like this. Let's blame everybody else for my election loss but me. And I was the victim of Vladimir Putin's evil sexism and manspreading. Manspreading. Fucking manspreading. You know, Hillary, maybe, the main reason why you lost is because only 25% of your ads focused on policy. Maybe it was easy in the Rust Belt to depict you as in favor of outsourcing jobs because you were in favor of outsourcing jobs. Maybe it was too easy to tie you to the establishment and the status quo in Wall Street because you took gargantuan amounts of money from Wall Street. Maybe it was easy to paint you as a war hawk, which people don't like. They generally don't like war because you're a fucking war hawk. Maybe it's on you. And maybe the answer is to not come out there and do your greatest hits of who to blame segment here. Maybe the best thing to do is not to start complaining about manspreading. Maybe it would be some goddamn self-reflection and to actually care about serious policy issues. But you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. It's time for you to move on. The Clinton wing of the Democratic Party is dead and gone. It just is. In the sense that you can't win being a Clinton-style Democrat. They've become a self-parody. Peter Dow the other day, he's the goofball who created Verit, the fact-checking site that's only for Hillary supporters, for the whatever the number is, 65-point-something million people who voted for Hillary. It's a fact-checking site, but only for these people. Weird, so you think facts only apply to those people? But he was tweeting about how some people say Bernie's push for Medicare for All has emboldened the Republicans to repeal Obamacare. So do you get the argument there? By being a left-winger, you are actually right-wing. And that's literally what a Verit article said, widely mocked across the internet. It was something like, by attacking Hillary from the left, it's a conscious embrace of the right wing. Well, there you go. That's Clintonism in a nutshell today. Clintonism in a nutshell is, as I do wars, as I deregulate, as I outsource jobs, I will act like the most egregious thing in the world is that Vladimir Putin manspreaded. Funny how this doesn't resonate. Okay, next. I want to show you guys how pathetic our political system has become in many respects. So this here is from Raw Story. A Florida state senator who is running for governor said this week that he would punish Duke Energy for its slow response after Hurricane Irma, by refusing their donations for one campaign cycle. The Tampa Bay Times reported that Senator Jack Lotfula was one of several Republicans to lash out at utility providers. In this cycle, Lotfula told the Times, I'm done taking money from them. Representative Chris Sprouls also promised to ask a lot of difficult questions. Hurricane Irma reportedly caused 1.3 million outages in Florida. To make matters worse, Duke Energy said that its automated tracking system broke down, forcing workers to triage the damage manually. Quote, we understood that people are frustrated. Duke Energy Florida President Harry Sideris admitted, power is such a vital piece of everybody's life, and when it's 93 degrees and you have no air conditioning, everybody gets frustrated. Also, that's life-threatening, by the way. That's life-threatening. People could die in that kind of an environment. Isn't it amazing that these clowns think that's a big moral stand? Let me tell you something. I am going to reject campaign contributions from this horrific company for one cycle. I mean, where do I even begin to dissect the lunacy of this? Guys, it should be illegal in the first place for there to be campaign contributions to, you know, from this company to this politician. Never mind having them. Never mind saying I'm only going to not take it for a year. I mean, like, what are we talking about here? What the fuck are we talking about here? I mean, this is wild. And just so everybody knows, like, this is more of a funny example of how corrupt and broken our system is, but there are literal deadly examples. So there are politicians who accepted money from chemical companies in Texas. They staved off regulations, deregulated, and as a result of the flooding brought about by Harvey, there's been toxic chemical leaks that are poisoning people and sickening them. The politicians could have prevented all this by not deregulating, by regulating efficiently, by not taking money from these chemical companies. But they took the money from the chemical companies, deregulated, made things less safe. Now there's toxic leaks and people are getting sick. So this is why politics is so important, because politics is everything. It's how your life is affected. It's your quality of life. It's how much sense the system makes. And the system makes no sense because of the massive amount of corruption that has a shitty incentive structure for politicians to do the wrong thing. And then they take brave moral stands by saying, I will reject contributions for one cycle. Aren't I so brave? Pat me on the back now, please. Okay. All right, I am going to take that final break real quick. I know it's late for a break. But we'll do it. We'll come back, and I'll squeeze in some more stories. Very jam-packed day today, man, I have to say. So when we come back, what'll I have for you? Let's see. I have a new analysis of the military budget, the new military budget that I have to give you. And then, holy shit, we have the Russia story where Morgan Freeman goes full neocon. You don't want to miss any of this, man. Stay right there. We'll have that and more. son of a bitch. All right, welcome back, y'all. I got 10 minutes. Let's get through as much as we can. The Intercept did an analysis of the new military budget, and look at their conclusion. One of the most controversial proposals put forward by Senator Bernie Sanders during the 2016 presidential campaign was a pledge to make tuition free at public colleges and universities. Critics from both parties howled that the pie-in-the-sky idea would bankrupt the country. Where, after all, would the money come from? Those concerns were brushed aside Monday night as the Senate overwhelmingly approved an $80 billion annual increase in military spending, enough to have fully satisfied Sanders' campaign promise. Wow. Instead, the Senate handed President Donald Trump far more than the $54 billion he asked for. The lavish spending package gives Trump a major legislative victory, allowing him to boast about fulfilling his promise of a great rebuilding of the armed services. The bill would set the U.S.'s annual military budget at around $700 billion, putting it within range of matching the spending level at the height of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Holy shit. Or with $80 billion a year, you can make public colleges and universities in the U.S. tuition-free. In fact, Sanders' proposal was only estimated to cost the federal government $47 billion a year. Oh my God, man, this is so crazy. If the additional military spending over the next 10 years instead went to pay off student debt, it could come close to wiping it out entirely. But proposals like that are written off as non-starters even by Democrats. In her new book, Hillary Clinton compares Sanders' idea to him nonsensically saying, Americans should get a pony. And while concerns about the cost of ponies abound, a few Democrats are raising similar concerns about military spending, even when it is meant for a commander-in-chief they consider reckless and unstable. I mean, look, man, going through what we just went through right there, it feels like we live in the Twilight Zone. It really does. Because it's so true that people, oh my God, unicorn, fairy dust, pie in the sky, far left silliness where they want tuition-free college. What are you, crazy? We can't afford that. Who's going to pay for it? Literally nobody said $700 billion for the military. Trump asked for a $54 billion increase, and we thought that was crazy. This is an $80 billion increase. They gave him more than what he asked for. What the fuck is that? And only 8 Democrats voted against it. Nobody brought up costs. Nobody brought up costs. Actually, I'm wrong. Excuse me. Only 8 senators in total voted against it. Some of them were Republicans. Bernie Sanders voted against it. I think Kirsten Gillibrand voted against it. And Rand Paul voted against it. And then I forget the others. Forgive me on that. It's not really a steel trap. I'm trying to make it one, but it's hard. But everybody bitched about the cost of tuition-free college when the cost of tuition-free college is less than just the increase that was given in military spending. So think about that. It's $700 billion for the military budget. The cost of free college is $47 billion. So it's less than the increase in the military spending. The increase was $80 billion. Nobody batted a fucking eyelash. And everybody attacks. Whenever it's anything for you, people say, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. What are we going to do? We get free college. Single-payer healthcare. Well, we can't afford that. But for wars, endless, man. Endless amounts of money. And by the way, a crazier fact than all this. The cost of the program for the new F-35 fighter jet, because, you know, the previous one, just not good enough, obviously. I mean, who are we going to fight ISIS's Air Force with? I mean, we obviously need new fighter jets. The cost of that program could nearly wipe out all student loan debt. We have a student loan debt crisis. And the cost of that program could nearly wipe out the debt, and it was all for a new fighter jet. It's just so fucking crazy, man. It's just so nuts. It just shows our priorities. War, it's baked into the cake. It's a blank check. It's baked into the cake. You can't even question it. Anything for the people, we can't afford it. What are we going to do here? And by the way, just final point on that. It's actually not true that we can't afford it, clearly. But it saves money. Most of these things that the so-called far left in the U.S. talks about, it doesn't even cost more money. It saves money. So for college, it is an investment in the future. And what happens is you educate a tremendous number of people. They all get out in the workforce. They end up making more money because they were just educated. And then they pay back for the free college and then some. So that's a win-win. It's a win for Medicare for All because it costs $32 trillion as opposed to $49 trillion if we don't do it because you get rid of the unnecessary for-profit price-gouging middleman. So it's not even true that it costs a shitload of money to do the things that other modern nations have done. Guys, fucking Slovakia has free college. Oh, wait, Slovakia or Slovenia? My apologies for not knowing which one, but it's one of them. They have free college, and they can do it. And you're to tell me we can't do it when the cost of tuition-free public college was less than the increase in the military budget. JusticeDemocrats.com, man. JusticeDemocrats.com. We have to elect Justice Democrats. I mean, that's our only hope. We have to get money out of politics, elect Justice Democrats to get people who are truly populist left. Wouldn't it be amazing if we had, you know, 435 Bernie Sanders in Congress? I like how it took me a while to get that number. I was fishing for it. Got it, 435. Wouldn't it be amazing? Let's fight to try to make that a reality. JusticeDemocrats.com. Okay. Final story of the day. We're going to save the Russia one for tomorrow because it's kind of long. The Brookings Institute did a new poll on freedom of speech on college campuses. And I wanted to share the results with you real quick. We don't have much time left in this show, but I think these numbers speak for themselves, so let me just give them to you real fast. One of the questions was, does the First Amendment protect hate speech? 39% said yes, 44% said no. So a plurality said no, hate speech is not protected under the First Amendment. It's actually just not true. It is protected under the First Amendment. There are super few exceptions to the First Amendment. Direct threats of violence is one thing that's not protected. But general hate speech, like if somebody's a racist asshole and they want to say racist shit, that's protected speech. You don't get to throw somebody in jail because they said racist shit or because they're a douchebag. And honestly, that's the way it should be. We should fight racism, of course, and we should fight, you know, people pushing horrible policy ideas or whatever the case may be. But you don't lock them up if they start espousing those opinions. That's crazy. But a plurality of people said, no, hate speech is not protected. Plurality of people on college campuses. The next question was, is it okay to shut down a speaker? 51% said yes, 49% said no. Wow. So a majority of people say, yes, it's okay to shut down a speaker. Look, man, the main test of whether or not you really believe in free speech as a matter of principle is, do you support it for people you despise? And if you answer no, then you don't support free speech. That's not a situation where you say, oh, I support free speech, but no, then you don't support it. I believe it was Noam Chomsky who said, if you don't support free speech for those whose opinions you despise the most, you don't support it at all. And that was Noam Chomsky, and Voltaire, I think, said that. There was like 1,000 people who said that, who are intellectuals, who understand the way that a principle position works. By the way, this is why the ACLU actually defended, believe it or not, the KKK in the famous Skokie case. They were going to march through a predominantly Jewish town, and the ACLU said, look, we despise these people. We hate everything they stand for. They're horrendous. But as long as the march is peaceful, then of course they're allowed to do it. So, you know, it's a hard thing for people to wrap their mind around that you can have those two things can be true at the same time. I fucking hate this person and everything they stand for, but okay, you can speak your mind. I mean, that's how do you think I fucking feel when I come out here and defend Milo Yiannopoulos or Steven Crowder or Ben Shapiro? I think they're horrendous and wrong about pretty much everything. So I don't want to defend them, but if it's them versus idiots trying to deplatform them and shut them down on a college campus, I don't have a choice. I have to defend them because what's next? What, you don't think people find me horrifically offensive? Go talk to a Ted Cruz voter about how they feel about me, and they'll tell you, I want to shut down that guy. I have no leg to stand on if I said I want to shut down Ben Shapiro, Milo Yiannopoulos, but then I say, oh, but you have to let me speak. Because no, there are people who find me reprehensible. So if I'm saying I'm going to let these reprehensible people speak, then I can tell the people who think I'm reprehensible, bitch, you have to let me speak. And then final one here, is it okay to use violence to stop a speaker from speaking? Here, thankfully, we have a big drop-off. 19% say yes, 81% say no. Though that is still a concerning number. 19% of people say use violence to stop a speaker. Yeah, I mean, that should, on its face, you should realize that that's horrendous. As a general rule, and this is across the board, anybody who engages in offensive violence, you've now become the asshole. You've become the asshole. You're the bad person. If you're the one who does the offensive violence, even if the other person has an ideology that is horrific in every possible way, if you're the one who did the offensive violence, then you're the prick. Because you're you know the old saying, actions speak louder than words, that thing your mom told you 1,000 times? That's kind of true. So you could say, I'm peaceful, I'm a good person, and that's why I'm going to beat the shit out of somebody who wasn't about to attack me. Well, no, you're a shitty person who just beat the shit out of somebody who wasn't about to attack you, even though they might have a horrific ideology and be a terrible person. So, what the fuck do I know? I'm just a YouTube host. But there you go. That's the Brookings Institute's new poll on freedom of speech on college campuses, and it's got some pretty sad results. All right, guys, I love you. We're done here. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Mwah, I'm out.